Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings, they're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Club and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself, because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this? A movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another. And don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then... You get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof massaging leather-appointed seats are available features.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast! Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You got me, Tom, and Lotus, and we're back, but you know what? We've finished a lot of the other stuff we were doing around like necromancy and that kind of stuff, and we decided it was time to start another series here. And with all the rumors about the Oblivion remake and Skyblivion coming to very, very close launch, probably sometime later this year, we thought it'd be fun to go back to Oblivion and kind of talk about it a bit. We're probably going to cover some more individual lore topics on future episodes, but in order to get everybody into the pool, so, you know, walk down the steps into the pool, we decided this week that we were going to compare the story and the kind of the world setting, the general feeling and vibe of Oblivion.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's called the vibe of the different games.
The vibe of the different games. We're going to compare Oblivion to Skyrim because over 60 million copies of Skyrim have been sold, about 10 million copies of Oblivion. So there is a large audience that has been playing Skyrim over the last 14 years who never really gave Oblivion a try. And it is a very different game, not just from like a gameplay and play and technology standpoint, but also from the way the world feels, the way the quest lines work, the stories, the details. And so we thought we'd go through and we're gonna note all the differences in order to kind of get you into that. And hopefully by the end of this, you're going to see why it's one of our favorite games also. Like, it's up there with Morrowind and Skywind.
Skywind?
Like the modded version of Morrowind to make it more yes. Skyrim that never came. Anyway, Skyrim, you guys know what we're talking about. So, Lotus,
get it. We all get it.
Lotus, you ready to dive in? How you doing?
I am. And actually, just as a note to like, oh, favorite things or whatever, because Oblivion is kind of like this weird... 10 million copies of something is like a huge success, but just comparatively,
heck, especially like 17 years ago when it came out.
Yeah. But at the same time, like by comparison, it's obviously, well, very little compares to the amount of copies of Skyrim sold. But like Morrowind has this like cult following, me included, where it's just like, oh, well, that's the best one type of deal. But I will say, just before we get into it, the award for my overall favorite soundtrack from any Elder Scrolls game is actually Oblivion.
Oh, yeah, I agree too. Like, yeah. Skyrim's is very good. Morrowind's is interesting.
I love Morrowind's, but again, overall, from beginning to end, Oblivion is actually my favorite from beginning to end album. I feel like of any in the series.
There are moods that some of the songs hit that are not in some of the other games. This is like on a scale of 1 to 10. If Oblivion's a 10, then Skyrim's like a 9. You know, it's kind of like that.
And obviously, some of my favorite tracks are from Morrowind or whatever, or from Skyrim. But like, I just mean like as an overall album, like really nothing compares to Oblivion for me. It's just my favorite of all of the stuff that was composed for the series.
Nothing compares to you, Oblivion. Now I've got Sinead O'Connor singing Oblivion songs.
Nah, I don't like where that's going.
All right, so hey, let's get into it. Here we go. Good old 90s jokes.
90s kids will remember.
90s kids will remember Sinead O'Connor. Nothing compares to... Anyway, here, let's get into this. So I've got a series of main points here. Main point number one, the tone of the games. So with the tone, we have a difference between high fantasy, which is Oblivion, and gritty realism. And these are general tone differences. You could argue that, yeah, there's still some gritty realism in Oblivion, there's still some high fantasy in Skyrim, but they kind of sway a little bit more in one direction or another.
Yeah, it's what they lean most into, not that it's devoid of the other.
Right, right. So Oblivion embraces this like classic high fantasy thing with similar tropes. You've got like ancient prophecies, otherworldly realms, Oblivion, which is in the title, Daedric cults, part of the title, and noble bloodlines. You have like the, you know, the Septim dynasty, and oh no, the emperor's dead, who's going to replace him, he doesn't have any children, oh maybe he does, all of that stuff. And you get swept up in this narrative between like the emperor, gods, demons, you know, Daedra, and it feels very high fantasy. It feels very like this is traditionally kind of the way this stuff goes, right? Like very almost Lord of the Rings, but not the same plot line. If that makes sense.
Sure. It just, for lack of a better way of describing it, it's the feel. It's definitely got a more, especially because of like some of the aesthetic to the armor is more whimsical than you'll see in Skyrim.
Unless, it's a little cleaner, yeah, a little neater,
and definitely less weird than Morrowind.
A little less gritty, a little bit more. And it might be just the difference in graphics technology, but a little bit more, the lines are cleaner. Everything's more symmetrical.
I was
going to
say, Skyrim feels like a dirty world.
Yes.
Oblivion does not as much.
No, not at all. And speaking of dirty worlds, like one of the examples of this is you go into literal like gates to a hell, right? To Oblivion. It feels like a hell dimension. And then you have to fight these evil creatures in order to close the gates. That feels like a descent into hell. That feels like a very high fantasy kind of thing, right? Now, the difference here is that Skyrim is much more grounded in its tone. It's got this like Nordic aesthetic, which is very real world. There's real Nordic history that they're pulling from. Heck, even and real Nords didn't necessarily have horns on their helmets, but that's the modern fantasy of like Nords with horns on their helmets and things like that.
Sure.
So you've got that, and it definitely has its own kind of cultural, historical lens, and this idea of like an ancient power that's reemerging in the world, and it's got kind of that, but it's all in this gritty, politically interesting world where it's not just about like the emperor is dead, is the emperor's line going to come back, which again feels very Lord of the Rings. You have more of like a civil war going on, Imperials and Nords, you know, Stormcloaks, and what's going to happen with that? And you of course have Daedric princes and all of this other stuff, but it feels like there's more moral ambiguity there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair?
Yeah, I would definitely. It's a little less good versus evil as opposed to faction versus faction.
Yes.
Whereas in Oblivion, it's a little more cut and dry. Like you are being invaded by this horrible threat that wants to kill you. Now, granted, Alduin is an end of the world threat as well. They kind of generally always have that type of thing.
Sure.
But I feel like the political part of it is a little more, not at the forefront, but like it's almost like a side main quest. Whereas you don't like the other quests in Oblivion, not that there aren't weird high fantasy or, you know, grounded ones to go with the high fantasy, it just seems less so, more than like Skyrim. Like Skyrim, there, it's more peculiar if it's super high fantasy, at least in my opinion. And Oblivion, it's like, well, yeah, no, there's obviously normal things happening as well in the kingdom, but it's got a more high fantasy focus.
Right, right. Yeah. So here, let's move on to number two. The main quest is significantly different from the perspective of who you play in the story. So the difference here is in Oblivion, and we talk about this all the time, Lotus, you are not the chosen one. You are not the main hero, right? Martin Septim, and spoilers, by the way, for a 17-year-old game, but Martin Septim is the chosen one. He is the one, and you are there to support him. You are there to bring him out of hiding. You're there to support him. You are there to fight against the dangers of the world, but you are a secondary character to his main character in the end. Whereas in Skyrim, You were the dragonborn. Like, you are the one who absorbs the souls of dragons. You are the one who can, you know, actually become powerful enough to fight Alduin at the end, right? Like, all of that is very, very different. And so the quest lines kind of circle around this. In Oblivion, you are supporting these characters and you're doing some very important things, but you're still always a piece of the world rather than the main focus. Whereas in, like, you know, Skyrim, you are the one who climbs the 7,000 steps to High Hrothgar, and you're the one who learns the shouts, yeah, all of that stuff.
And I mean, so one, that's one of my favorite things about the story is that you are not, you're supporting the important people, and as a proxy are important because they might not make it without you, but you are pretty replaceable in theory.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. You know, it's like, oh, well, yeah, you know, you're the one in Patrick Stewart's dream.
right.
But it's to do something for someone else rather than yourself. Now, right, granted, the Shivering Isles gives you a bit more of a permanent focus to the world, which I think is also cool. But I just really like the fact that that's an interesting twist, that you're not the hero. You're more of a supporting character, because that's actually pretty unusual in general, I guess, for you know, any fiction I've
fantasy
read or watched.
In most games, yeah, across the board, that's less common.
And on top of that, it's the only time really in the series that that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
usually the main focus.
Right, right. It's kind of the difference, speaking of Lord of the Rings, if both of these were in Lord of the Rings, it would be the difference between being like Aragorn or Frodo or Gandalf or being Sam or Gimli.
right.
Like, you're there to support the other characters. They're the ones who are the more important people, but you're still important. You're just a support character.
Yeah, you're secondarily important. Like, right, but right. I just think that is, you know, that's pretty neat. And it's something that I guess they almost explained. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, this is going to my insert Lotus putting his stupid Battlespire reference in as much as possible for the nine of us that have played that game. But like, it's funny because in that game, yes, okay, you're the main hero, but you're the second best mage in the Battlespire. Like, you lost to somebody else, and that's ironically the only reason you didn't get messed up at the start. So it was like, you being second best ironically lets you be the hero in that game, but you're the hero. This game, you're just straight up like helping the hero, so you're a lesser hero.
Yeah,
so
you're the hero of Kvatch at one point, but
right,
you're not the hero
which everybody
of
will remind you of
the Empire. You know, that's a very different thing.
Very different, for sure. Yeah, so again, one of the features I really like about the storytelling in Oblivion.
Yes, cool stuff. All right, so number three, there's a difference between the villains and the mythic themes, so go with me here. In Oblivion, we have the Mythic Dawn. And this is a secret society of Daedric worshippers. They believe that Nirn should be ruled by Mehrunes Dagon. They're basically like kind of an end times cult who wants to bring about the destruction of the world in the way that they see fit, right? And in order to do that, they assassinate the Emperor because they want to be able to open Oblivion Gates, which basically breaks down the prophecy and how all of that stuff works about Amulet of Kings and all of that, right? So the Red Diamond. In Skyrim,
there's a song about it.
Yeah, there's a song about it. In Skyrim, Alduin is the prophesied end times thing. So they're kind of similar. One is about the prophecy of the way to keep the Daedric princes out of, you know, messing with with Nirn. And the other is about, oh no, the world is supposed to end, and this is how it ends, right?
Right.
And then, and now you're in both cases, you're fighting back against that. But one of them is being manipulated by like this mythic cult, and the other is kind of just the way the world seems to go, and you're fighting back against the reality of it. So they're subtle differences, but they're definitely different.
Yeah, they really are. And again, it's one of these things where it's like you can explore a similar theme, but in different ways. And I feel like that's one of the things that's most interesting about these games being back to back. Just because they do have a lot of similar themes, they're explored in very different ways.
Yeah, yeah. So another example would be in Skyrim, once you get far enough in the main quest line, same thing with Oblivion, once you get far enough in the main quest line, in Skyrim, you get dragons, and dragons kind of randomly show up places, and they mess stuff up, and you got to deal with them, and you absorb their souls, you take their bones, all of that stuff. In Oblivion, you come across gates. These gates seemingly randomly pop up, but they're just like the dragons. They're in specific places where they're more likely to show up than others. And then you go into the gates and you close the gates. So they're different. They have a similar kind of mechanic, but the way that that feels is very different. One of them is like, oh, I'm fighting bandits on the side of the road, and holy crap, there's a dragon here. What do I do? And the other one is, hey, there's a gate that popped up. Sometimes monsters come out of it. Do I want to go in there right now and fight a bunch of Daedra and go through an entire little dungeon in order to close it? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe after the 110th time, maybe not.
Maybe not. Right. So maybe I'll just nope out of here. And sure, you can run away from a dragon, but there's something that feels much more impactful about like, oh crap, there's a dragon on me. What am I going to do? Than like, oh, look, there's a gate over there. Nope, I'm going this way. Like, it feels more optional.
I'll nope out of this stationary gate that might or might not be dropping enemies.
Right, right. Yeah, but it does change the way the world feels, right? Like the dragons can change the world, the way the world feels. An Oblivion gate, as you get close to it, the sky gets like red. Everything's like the world, like these little pieces of like flame rain down, you know, like it starts to feel more like Oblivion. So they're similar, but yet still different.
Yep.
So that's yeah, go ahead.
It's like if you for those in the audience that play ESO, it's like the different types of incursions that happen. Different zones have different like group events you do. Now, granted, these are single player games, so it's not a group event type of deal, but it's like the world event that the game revolves around, instead of it being zone specific, like with ESO covering like a bunch of zones, it's like game specific. Okay. Like, and to be fair, both of these are in Elder Scrolls Online. They've reused both these mechanics. Yeah. When you're in elsewhere, you deal with dragon incursions. Mm-hmm. And when you're in Blackwood, you deal with, not Daedric gates, but they're rifts that open, and it's, you know, Dagon's kind of trial run for how to invade and see if he can get around some of the restrictions that he has. So it's kind of interesting that these are both like used later on in the series.
Right, right. And what I think is also interesting to point out that, and before anybody's like, well, actually, there are people who believe Mehrunes Dagon is the thing that ushers in the end of time. Like, that is right. Part of the prophecy about him. But that there is also prophecy about the dragons being involved with that, too.
Yep.
And they both seem pretty accurate. Like, they both seem likely.
There's some pretty strong overlap, I could definitely see.
Yeah, yet they're both distinctly different, because the dragons don't work for Mehrunes Dagon. Like, they're not in like cahoots with each other. They're two very different things, and the lore around them is very different, and the culture's belief about them, depending on the culture, is very different. And yet they both seem like possibilities that could actually happen, and you got to deal with them. So they're similar in that way.
100%.
Yeah. So, all right. So that stuff's pretty similar, but yet the nuances are a little different. Number four, this one, Well, I'll just read it and then we'll discuss it. The dialogue in the this is titled Character Charm. So yeah, I'm going to talk about Skyrim first, then we'll talk about Oblivion. Skyrim has more polished dialogue, lots of voice diversity. Now, not a ton of voice. You're going to still run into the same voice actors, but more voice diversity and a more cinematic presentation. As you know, even the beginning of the game, like, oh, you're finally awake. You're on a cart. You're having conversations with people. You're moving through, you know, into different areas, and then you get off the cart. Like, it feels more cinematic, right? In Oblivion, there are like, what, 12 voice actors or something?
And yeah, and sometimes they change voice actor based on the line, even though it's the same person.
Yeah, it's not as polished when it comes
to
that
side of it.
I mean,
it was also one of the first examples of it being fully voiced in the series.
That's true. And it was 17 years ago. I mean, this was still very early in...
Yeah, this was nearly a launch game for the 360. Right. It did miss the window, but like...
Think of it this way. The distance between now and Oblivion is the same distance between Oblivion and, like, Super Mario Brothers on the Super Nintendo.
Nope. No, I don't like that. Now I feel much older. I don't care for that.
the Super Nintendo version of Legend of Zelda.
Nope. No, I don't like any of this.
Like, but like, think about that. Like the distance.
I don't want to.
In time, like the advancements in tech, and so the advancements in tech between Oblivion and Skyrim, it's actually a very short period of time. It's just a few years, but yet the presentation was leaps and bounds different. But that doesn't mean that Oblivion was bad. I mean, that the character faces are a little bit, I don't know, overly round and funny looking. The amount of geometry wasn't as good. The subtle, sudden tonal shifts in the, like you were saying, like sometimes you'd have a character and then all of a sudden their voice would change to some other voice actor. But sometimes it would be the same voice actor and they'd like lose their accent. Or sometimes it would be the same voice actor and all of a sudden they'd go from like, hello there, citizen. I can't believe you did that. Why don't you come on over and we'll trade? You know, and it's like,
yeah,
what? Why did you? What? How did that work? And they're clearly still figuring that stuff out.
Right. And again, you know, technology was advancing, but they were still really kind of working with they were really pushing that system right out the gate in a lot of ways. So, you know, they had a lot more time to refine Skyrim for that same system. Like that's a several year gap worth practice on the system and the hardware for Skyrim, where it was, you know, a lot of time on the dev kits, obviously, because it came out not even a full year, I don't believe, after the system launched. So very different parameter set on what they were working with.
Right. And then if you go backwards from Oblivion to Morrowind, the distance is equally interesting because you go from all these voice characters with actual real personalities, and then you go back to Morrowind and it's like reading a novel.
If somebody was talking, you knew it was probably really like a main focus storyline thing,
right? And it would be paragraphs. It would be like, tell me about the city, you know, the city of Vivec, and it would be like, here's paragraphs with clickable. It was like reading a Wikipedia article with clickable links is what it felt like. Very, very different.
Very different.
Yeah, yeah. So the character and dialogue is different. Also, I think this, you can kind of squeeze this in here too. Both games have these systems for how the characters interact with the world. They have their schedules. They go to certain places. They get up in the morning. They go work at their shop. Then in the middle of the day, maybe they go take a break and then they go back to their shop. And then at night, they go sleep in their bed. And then it just cycles over and over and over again, right? That works similarly in both games. But the implementation of that in Oblivion is a little bit weirder. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, again, it might be just them exploring with it, but that whole Radiant AI thing that they had going on.
Sometimes the characters would Radiant
just questing
choose
that was done by...
True, yes.
Not that there isn't that in Skyrim to an extent, but it was a little more focus on it, I felt like, in Oblivion. You could kind of repeat a lot of things in Oblivion as like Radiant questing ID. It was just kind of like procedurally generated quest to let you kind of keep going. And there were definitely some like the Thieves Guild and stuff like that in Skyrim, but I feel like there was a little more focus on trying to see if they could get that to work in Oblivion, from my recollection, for, you know, better or worse.
Yeah, and in Skyrim, the characters can wander around, like, say, a city like Whiterun, and they'll bump into each other and they might have a conversation, but that stuff all feels much more intentional. In Oblivion, it was like you'd have two characters that just happen to be passing by on the road, and one of them would go, hey, did you ever find that... the seed you were looking for in order to plant your garden? Yes, thank you for asking. I did find the seeds. Good to know. And then they like leave and keep walking.
Yes.
Like, it was like, oh, that was the whole conversation.
I have to go back to my home planet now.
right. Whereas like in Skyrim, it's like, you know, they walk around, they seem to have more actual real conversations rather than just like bring up one thing. Okay, goodbye.
You know? Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And again, it's just an improvement on the system. Everything has its beginnings, and Oblivion definitely has a few more the beginnings of some of the systems they really implemented.
Right. So here, let's move on to number five. I think we're at number five. Yep, number five. The setting is very different. So Skyrim, it's like this Nordic frontier kind of environment where there are different biomes in Skyrim. You've got like the very north, which is very, very cold and frigid and lots of snow. You've got like the Riften Forest, which is very beautiful, and it's got like these fall colors. You have the center of the map, which seems to be a little bit more, what's the word for like tundra-like?
Yeah, without being overly frozen. Tundra.
Yeah, but there's still grass and plants and things like that. Each of the zones feels different for sure, and each of the zones still feels different in Cyrodiil, in Oblivion, but there's this feeling of like this, I don't know, there's something about that like northern Nordic thing that I think just really hit for when Skyrim came out. But it also lends to that same kind of gritty feel that we talked about before at the beginning. Like, you don't come across somewhere that's just super bright green and lush with lots of colors. You can pick up flowers and things, but it's never quite, everything feels always a little bit desaturated. If that makes
yes,
sense.
The color palette is very different, I would say, between the two of them. Desaturated is a good way of putting it. That's definitely a thing from the 360. Like, Gears of War and everything like that was always known for, like, Call of Duty. It was like, how many shades of brown is your game going to look?
Right.
Like, Fallout 3 was another one.
Yep.
Where it was like, oh, you know, pick your shade of brown and green, and that's going to be your game.
Yeah, and Oblivion stood out in stark contrast to that trend.
Right, which was also kind of related to the fact that it's like, well, it was kind of not first to the party, but much earlier on, so that trend hadn't been established just yet with the gritty realism type of deal in the color palette. And the other thing, again, not necessarily how it maybe is intended, but seasonally, when you're in Skyrim, I feel you get the feel of two seasons. You get winter, and if you're in the Rift, you get autumn. Those are your two seasons.
Right.
When playing Oblivion, I always get, much like with Elder Scrolls Blades, for anybody who played that game, I always feel that it has a feeling of spring-like to it.
Or summer, like spring, summer,
but it's like not even like the hot, it's like so much of the stuff is like sort of in bloom and like, but like there's even like snow and stuff like that in various points in Oblivion.
Yeah, if you go to
it's
the north.
It's just not common, so it feels like, oh, you know, you can have part of it, and it's like, being that I'm in New England, I have all the four seasons pretty consistently, you can be late in spring and it can be 65 degrees outside, but there's still snow on the ground.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's got that weird spring feel to it. And I always felt that was kind of the case with Oblivion.
Yeah. The other thing I liked about Oblivion is that you are in Cyrodiil. You're in the center of the continent. And if you go north, it starts to feel like Skyrim. Things get snowy.
Right.
If you go south, it starts to feel like Black Marsh. Things
it's
get kind of marshy.
It's got a much more centralist feel.
Right. And it almost feels like a microcosm of the entire continent all in one place. Because as you got to the edges of the map, it started to feel more like the zones that you were getting close to, but never could quite go into.
Sure.
But it, there was something about, especially before Skyrim came out, this feeling of like the culture, the climate, like, heck, even the cities in the north felt more Nordic. The cities in the south felt more Argonian. Like, you felt like you were kind of diving into each of the cultures and moving around an even greater amount of space than was actually there, because there was a distinct difference with the way Not only the environment felt, but the people felt, the conversations, the style of the homes, all of that felt very different. And sure, Skyrim has its different zones, and Markarth looks very different from Whiterun, looks very different from Solitude. Sure,
right.
Absolutely. But it's not a microcosm of the entire continent. It's more of just distinct different parts of Skyrim.
Yes, and it all still has a very wintry feel to it, to me, at least. Sans the Rift, which is, you know, definitely got the autumn vibes going.
Yeah, yeah. So I always felt like that was a fun part of exploring the map in Oblivion,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. And, I mean, you can't forget the first time you come out of the sewers. Like, I remember going through that. In fact, the first time I played, I'm pretty sure I started a character, played through maybe halfway through the sewer tutorial section at the beginning, and I was like, no, I want to be a different character. I didn't realize that you get a chance to, like, tweak things right when you get to the end.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I went back, created another character, played through again. I was like, okay, maybe I'll do more this. Maybe I'll do more magic or whatever. I don't remember specifics. And then finally got to the point, after doing this maybe two or three times, probably spent too many hours in the sewer by that point, and then finally getting to that grate and being like, oh, I can change my character here if I want. And so I quick save it there, go through the grate, and then that, and everyone talks about this, that, and heck, Todd Howard talks about this and uses the same thing in Fallout and all these other games. That moment of, like, you come out and you see the colors and, like,
yeah, the world grass, in front of you,
the blue sky, the water across in front of you, like, and everything in Oblivion had... Like, there was not real HDR yet. There was not real, like, high resolution. Like, this was the first console that could do 1080p. So, like, that level of resolution was still pretty new. But everything had kind of that weird smeared, like, pseudo HDR thing going on.
You remember this? A little bit.
So that it felt like coming out into almost like a painted world. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so to your point, the art style that we've kind of been looking at is there's almost like a watercolor aesthetic to Oblivion.
Yeah. And even more so when you're actually in a painting. But
I was going to say, yeah, specifically related to the painting quest, which is really entertaining with the painted troll fat.
yes.
But yeah, right. I was going to say, but it has that watercolor feel to it. Again, kind of building off the whimsical nature of its high fantasy, definitely feels more like that in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. So that sets the difference. The setting does distinctly feel different. So be aware of that, jumping into it. All right, number six. The guilds and the side stories feel very, very different. You can kind of summarize this as, like, personal arcs to political drama, or and not just political drama in the sense of, like, the Civil War, but, like, heck, the Dark Brotherhood feels like political drama. All of that stuff has kind of its own different thing. So if you look at Oblivion, its guilds offer very clear and structured progression, and then there are memorable twists, right? And in Skyrim, it feels like the quest lines are more rushed, if that makes sense, or each quest is less connected to the previous quest.
Okay, girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself. Because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another. And don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation. But then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
So the difference I would explain here is that Skyrim's feels more like a game where they set up like, okay, go through this quest, go through this quest, go through this quest, go through this quest. And then after the fifth, sixth, seventh quest, however many quests are in the quest line, then you come across the like ending climax twist thing that happens, right? And there's some sort of big thing at the end, which is a fun and exciting thing. And then you're done. And maybe you have the Radiant quests after that. Oblivion felt like I am actually a part of this group. And there's more than just like seven quests to do. And each quest, I feel like I'm working up the ranks of the group in a very like, I remember Skyrim feeling more like a game and Oblivion feeling more like, okay, I'm doing the Mage's quest line now. I guess I'm part of this group. And if I'm part of this group, I need to be this person. I need to do these things. I need to act in these ways. I don't know what the boundaries of this are. And because the quest line takes longer to do and there's more quests, it feels like you can kind of sit and be that person in that quest line longer, if that makes sense.
I can, yes, I actually would agree with that. I do agree with you on that one. It does have that feel to it. Because again, it's, I guess, a stark contrast of saying like I'm part of this group is the one that it's kind of memed at this point where it's like you can basically beat the College of Winterhold's quest line barely knowing how to use any magic,
right? Yeah,
barely being required.
It's you do some cool stuff in it. Like, don't get us wrong. You do some cool stuff, but like after only so many quests, it's like all of a sudden
you can go in as a thug and not really have any magical aptitude and become a master.
Yeah, you're the archmage after just like seven quests.
Whereas you have to like crawl your way up the ranks by collecting alchemical ingredients for different like guild sections.
Yeah.
To even have them talk to you.
Right. And you have to visit different cities and the different guilds. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That all felt like, I hope they go back in that direction because the direction they went with like Fallout 4 was more similar to Skyrim. Those quest lines for different groups are still fairly small. If maybe they feel a little denser, but then you go to like Starfield felt very slim. On like you're doing this group, and again it felt like here's seven quests, and I'm sure the number's not 100% accurate, but it felt more like, okay, I did that, I spent 2 to 3 hours doing it, I'm done this now, on to something else, I guess. Whereas
right.
Oblivion felt like a thing you lived in, you know, you could spend 10 hours doing a quest line for a guild and just kind of earning your way up the ranks while doing other stuff too. Like, I think that's something else too, is that in Skyrim, it feels like if once you start a quest line for a guild, you want to kind of mainline that quest line. You just want to keep doing it until you get it done, and then you're on to something else. Whereas Oblivion felt like I'm part of this guild now. I'm going to continue doing other things out in the world, but I'm going to keep an eye out for ways I can continue to do this on the side, if that makes sense.
Yep. No, 100%.
So very different lived-in kind of feel, and I hope they go back to this for Elder Scrolls 6. I think these are the things that make the world building really work, is because you feel like you actually have to. And yes, it is a little more grindy, but it's not grindy in an annoying kind of World of Warcraft sort of way. Like, I'm going to improve my crafting, so now I have to mine all the ore on, you know, this side of the continent and make sure that I go
get
all
the things. Sure, or bring me 112 skeever butts, which, don't get me wrong, there is the give me 10 Nurnroot, give me 20 Nurnroot, give me 30 Nurnroot. Right. There are those too.
But that kind of stuff didn't make me feel like I have to go grind this right now. Instead, it made me feel like, okay, well, while I'm out adventuring, I need to just be aware, because that's what you would do in real life, right? Like, if somebody said, like, Lotus, if somebody said, like, hey, Pepsi has released Crystal Pepsi again, but it's only in certain locations, and it's going to be out for like the next 3 months. If you happen to come across one, please let me know. If you want to buy it and ship it to me, I'll pay for it. You wouldn't just stop what you're doing right now and go to every store in the area looking for Crystal Pepsi, right?
That's true. And I also appreciate that somehow that was what you chose.
Crystal Pepsi. This is another 90s reference.
I was going to say, 90s kids will remember.
Yeah. I mean, all this thinking back in time stuff has got my brain back in history. But instead, what you would do is for like the next 3 months, anytime you had to go to the store, anytime you went to get groceries, you just kind of keep your eye open. And if you saw it, you'd pick one up. That's how you would do it. And after a certain amount of time, you'd come across like, hey, can you get me 3 or 4 of those? Okay, I got you 3 or 4. Here you go. I'll ship them to you. Thank you so much. Like, move on to the next quest. it's something you do on the side while still doing other things, which is kind of the way the Oblivion Gates felt also, if you think about it. It's more of like a, hey, I'm over here on the side of the map. Oh, another Oblivion Gate. I guess I'll do it. Rather than let me hunt down all the Oblivion Gates and I'm just going to hone in and focus on that one thing. Now, I'm sure there are people out there who don't share my view of this and are going to say, well, no, I mainlined each of those things and that's just how I play games. And that's fine, too. I guess my greater...
Sure, that's totally a thing you can do. It just felt... to your point, and a lot of times I do that because I'm very... goal oriented in games, like we joke about like the completion aspect that I have that you really don't. So I definitely do kind of like fixate and like use stuff as like a goal oriented method, but at the same time, like, it feels like I'm choosing to focus on that as opposed to I sort of have to focus on that, I guess. So
yeah.
Even though I kind of fall into that camp, I get what you're saying. And like the Nernroot one, for example, I literally just kind of kept in the back burner in the background. Sure. I was like, yeah, I'll get to this as I collect them.
Yeah, so I much so.
Remember, don't eat them.
So much so that when my wife and I started dating, I think we got into playing Fallout 3 when it came out. And I was like, have you ever played Elder Scrolls Oblivion? And Skyrim wasn't out yet. And she was like, no, what is that? And I was like, oh, we need to play this. But I only had it on my computer. I only had the PC version. I didn't have the Xbox version. We had an Xbox. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go find a copy of this on the Xbox so we can play it together on the TV. And I remember finding a used copy at like some game store. I don't, it was like GameStop or something. And started playing and, you know, gave my now wife the controller. And she's like in the world. And she did exactly the same thing. Every time you'd hear the sound of Nernroot, she'd be like, oh. And she called it Nernroot, like on purpose because it was cute, you know, because not because she didn't remember the name. She's like, oh, Nernroot. And it was like, she wasn't mainlining the Nernroot. She was like doing other things and then just keeping an eye out. Oh, here's some. I'm going to go find it. You know, just put it in my pocket.
Right.
Like that was her thing. And that's exactly how you play it. It makes the world feel so much more just a piece of something bigger, you know?
Yep. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So there you go. That's that. And Oblivion's 2006. I'm saying 17 years. 19 years?
Oh, why'd you have to go and correct that?
19 years.
I really don't appreciate all this is doing to my psyche about how old I am this episode. Yeah. Really.
Oh, we're so old. All right. Number 7.
I don't appreciate any of that.
Number 7. There's definitely a shift in tone, not just in the ways that we've already described, but due to the era that these were created in. Oblivion is very much a child of the early 2000s and the success of the Lord of the Rings movie. I mean, this is a fantasy revival. It's very colorful. There is distinct differences in moral clarity. Although I would argue that in Tolkien's writings, and go listen to the Lord of the Rings lorecast that I do if you want any more detail on this, what comes across as stark moral contrast and a lot more in the films than in the books, there's a lot of gray if you really, really dig into it. There's actually a ton of gray. But general perception of these things was more of like a moral black and white kind of like, oh, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's got this like epic adventure trope in Oblivion. And the stakes are cosmic, right? It's big stakes, big black and white, evil bad guys. We're the good guys. Everyone does what they're supposed to do because they're on that side of the moral aisle, right? In Skyrim, you've got these kind of, everything kind of shifted to this morally gray thing. The world, and I feel like we're still in it. The idea that both of these things can be enjoyable, but that shift to like, I don't know, we were on the verge in 2011, we're just a few years from, you know, the Game of Thrones TV show coming out. And that idea of like, everybody's a little bit gray.
Yeah, the contrast being so apparent really became less appealing, it seemed like. Having that, well, nobody's really perfect, even the good guys, caught on quite a bit. Whereas back, you know, previously, that really wasn't the way things were done. It was, here's your good guys, to your point, here's your bad guys, like, mm-hmm. get them. Like,
yeah, right.
Make things better. And that's been a change in popular fiction recently, video games, TV shows, movies, things like that.
Sure. The Witcher, The Northman, like Since then, these other series have been much more and popular series. And I'm not saying this from a perspective of like literature or TV or movies. Since then, have only been this, and before then have We're going to get comments, especially on the video version, where people are like, "Well, actually, there's always been a diversity." I know that. I get it. But you can see the trend in the popularity of these things that points to a kind of zeitgeist in the culture that says these things tend to be more popular now as opposed to these other things then. That's the difference.
And the way that we're talking about how things aren't just one extreme or another also applies to what we're saying. It's not just there's only this type of writing or only that type of writing.
Right. Yeah. The Lord of the Rings was published.
The same exact stipulations that I'm referring to.
Right. The Lord of the Rings was not published in 2006, right? And also the first book of A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, was also not published in 2011, right?
Sure.
Those were both published decades before any of these things happened. So there's not like a complete through line. The through line is that certain types of fantasy seemed to rise to the top of popularity.
Yeah, and hit mainstream popularity.
Right, during certain periods of time.
Yep.
So if that,
and that's the, yeah, yeah, that's mainly it. It's like, because back in the day, like, another example of that, like, comic books are no longer nerdy. Like, the Marvel franchise movies have made how many zillions of dollars at this point? Like, because they became mainstream popular. Dungeons and Dragons was like a thing that was like, oh yeah, no, a bunch of nerds play that. And now it's like super commonplace. Everybody knows about it. It's all over the place. It's in things that are not Dungeons and Dragons, but model parts of their games or movies after things in Dungeons. So it's just, nerd culture became very mainstream in a lot of ways and changed this the same way that, like, you know, things ebb and flow. And it's kind of at the time, these were the ebbs and flows in like mainstream popularity is all.
Right, right. And so in Oblivion, you get like this distinct good and bad kind of thing going on. You also get these other nuanced differences. Like in Skyrim, it's got more of this kind of survival quality. In fact, it has a survival mode in the game.
Yeah.
It's all about your heritage. Like, oh, we are Nords. We're proud of our heritage. The fragmentation of power. And those, they're similar qualities to not just things like The Witcher, like I mentioned before, but also the popularity of series like Fallout. Survival in the wasteland. Your heritage has something to do with it. Like, are you a wastelander? Are you a vault dweller? Are you a ghoul? Like, where did you come from? Who do you like align with? And sure, there's some overlap there. You know, of course, you go back to Oblivion and it's like, well, if you were a Breton, then you're a Breton. And if you're a, you know,
sure,
a dark elf, you're a dark elf. And like, there's distinct differences, but there's something about the way that those things are portrayed, which feels different.
Yeah, for sure.
So there you go. That's number 7, the era and the tone differences as these things have been published and come out, which leads me to wonder, to kind of wrap this up, Lotus, do you think once we get an Oblivion remake, if that is really coming, or if we get the remaster, or like, I mean, not the remaster, the Skyblivion, the update.
Yeah, I was going to say, we at least know we're getting Skyblivion.
Right. So when that comes out, do you think it's going to hit as hard as it did in 2006 today?
Even though the culture is
very different, right? The culture of 2006 and the culture of 2025 are very different, like 19 years apart.
It is.
So you think, I mean, yeah, we both agree it's a wonderful game. It has its flaws, but it's a wonderful game. Do you think that in today's culture, Oblivion will still stand out and make sense, especially in the 14 years since Skyrim came out? The younger people who haven't played Oblivion, who have played Skyrim, or the teenagers who maybe haven't even played Skyrim, but all of a sudden they get interested because, let's say, there's an Oblivion remake and they're like, oh, I play Elder Scrolls Online. I want to try that out. Like, do you think that's actually going to resonate? Do you think people will it'll make sense to this generation?
I think people will like it. I think it will be more niche as a game because it's there's two sides to this that I kind of have. Is like, again, like I just mentioned earlier, like Dungeons and Dragons is almost, I'd say, more popular than ever. I mean, look at, what is it, Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah.
Did total gangbusters, and like that's like the gold standard for so many people now, is like what an RPG can do. So like that high fantasy thing is definitely super popular right now as well. So like that's kind of become part of the zeitgeist. Okay, cool. So that almost fits again with the style of Oblivion. However, Oblivion is in many ways a product of its time as well. So I don't know if people are going to have the same interest in something like that. Like,
well, I think there's an interesting example that may clue us in. A game like Final Fantasy VII, which came out well before Oblivion. This was like the late 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Right, 99? Was it? No, it was earlier than that. 97?
Somebody
look this up while we're doing it.
I feel like it was 97.
Right, so almost a decade before Oblivion. That game just got remade. There's been two, like, I think they're making it into a trilogy of individual games.
It's been updated.
But that game actually sold pretty well. Like millions of people have played. It was that Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth, I think, are the two that have come out so far.
Yeah.
And the story is slightly different. They've added some things and changed some stuff around. They've got a little bit more of this like multiverse kind of thing going on, which seems to be, over the last, say, 5 or 6 years, seems to be kind of the thing. But outside of the subtle differences in that story, it's by and large the same story. It's here are these characters, you're this protagonist, the mood, the vibe, the locations, the tone, a lot of that stuff is the same, and it still works. People are still into it. And I would have to assume that's not just people who played the original who are now, you know, 8 years, I can't do math, later.
So my thought, I guess, would be I think that this will make people interested in the Elder Scrolls series very happy and expose them to something that they might really enjoy. I don't know if this will pull in an audience outside if you already have an interest in the Elder Scrolls.
Interesting. I have to wonder. You know, I really
have
to wonder.
That's my thoughts on
it. What if, like, and here's another perspective we could look on it. Games where you are thrown into a world where your decisions actually matter, where the open world feels very responsive to you, have still been very popular. Cyberpunk came out a number of years ago now. Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, it's not a fantasy world, it's a medieval realistic kind of world, but same kind of thing. You have conversations with people, you follow the quest lines, different things happen depending on your choices. That has done very well. Do you think, I think a counterpoint to you would be those games, because of those reasons, still seem to perform very well. So version of Oblivion that is very polished might be appealing to that crowd, even if they've never played Skyrim or Oblivion.
I could see that. It's mainly just, I wonder if in a game that kind of some of the shock and awe factor was this immense world that was sort of unparalleled at the time, it's going to be a lot smaller than people are used to.
Yeah, that's true.
So one of the big factors to the game, like, I think people might really enjoy the RPG elements more because they're much more prominent in this than in newer entries to the series. I'll say ESO and Blades and Skyrim, stuff like that. We'll just go with those as like newer entries type of deal. I think the stronger RPG facets of the game will probably make people happy because it is something that people were kind of, myself included, hoping they would go a little harder in Starfield with, and they kind of didn't fully commit.
Right.
This is more toward that, and I think that will make people happy.
I also think that if we get an Oblivion remake and the response is, oh my God, I love how deep these systems are, or I love how intricate and how long it takes to get through a quest for a faction, any of that stuff, do you think that's going to affect how they develop Elder Scrolls VI?
I mean, I would hope they would have listened to some of the feedback they got on Starfield about people being like, that was a start.
But this would be even more reinforcement.
This would be even more
that,
and
right?
more directly related to it.
Like, what if they sell 3 million copies? Like, let's say Remake comes out. Boom. First week, 3 million copies sold. Responses in reviews, all of these things. Oh my God, I'm so glad they're back to this. This game, it has polished a lot of the things that weren't great the first time, but now because they've expanded, or they've kept systems that were here that were not in Skyrim, this feels like a fresh new thing. So glad that we're back to this. I hope that this continues for the next Elder Scrolls. Like, if that's what a lot of reviews and a lot of people say, it would be super tone deaf for the devs not to pay attention to that, because now they have an example from Starfield where people were like, yeah, not so much a fan the way you did it here. And then you have the complete counter example of like, hey, remember when we did this in Oblivion and we did it again? And everyone's like, yes, yes, more please.
Right. I think that will please the RPG fans. But again, to the point, I always wonder where is the line between accessibility to the general populace, where they make it easy to get into, mm-hmm. and where is the line that people like grindy stuff? And like, I know people always seem to think that having it be complicated is the best, and I think having a degree of complication is good.
But there's a balance. There's a balance.
But there's definitely a balance, and I'll be curious what the overall impression is of that balance, because some of the leveling is a little peculiar. Yeah, but what if they fix Oblivion? That stuff?
Like, I would imagine a remake version of the game, they're going to fix the combat a bit. They're going to fix the leveling a bit. They're going to fix the voice actor. Hopefully, they add more voice actors. You know, I would imagine that they have a list of like, okay, these are the things that people traditionally felt weren't great about this. So if we're going to remake it, we're going to make that stuff better, because that's your opportunity. Like, why do a remake if you're not going to fix the things that aren't as good in the game and try to make everything better, you know? Like,
right.
Keep the stuff that works, fix the stuff that doesn't.
Yep. I would be surprised if this did not sell well, to say the least.
Oh, sure. Yes.
I would, if this is real, which at this point more and more, because I keep hearing about it at bare minimum, it seems like it's
yeah, but even if not, like, Skyblivion is a thing.
And exactly, Skyblivion we know is a thing, right. So you at least got that. And I think it will have like a, you know, it'll definitely have an audience. I'm just curious the size of it. I guess I don't know, but I'm certainly excited for it either way. Like, I would love, as much as I love Skyrim and playing through Skyrim, I've long wanted them to visit some of the others in the series as well. Like, there's a lot of other games in the series. You don't need to just do Skyrim.
Right. And can you imagine if an Oblivion remake actually comes out and does really well? That's even more reason to remake Morrowind. Can you imagine Morrowind in a modern engine with actual conversations with characters, but yet you keep all the stuff that made Morrowind really good, but instead of having to like swing at a skeever 15 times before you hit it, it actually has a real combat system. Like, and you don't have to read pages of text. You can just act like, why don't they just put in voice acting? You know, like all of that stuff could train, like you have a story there. You have the guts of a system that everybody loves. You modernize it. How many people would go back immediately and play a modern version of Morrowind and just be like, all right, take my money, early version, $120, but I get this extra stuff and I, you know, send me a statue of Vivek or whatever. Yes. Yep. Yes, please. Here you go.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. There's definitely, and I think much like I had said, where it's like, I said that I really only think this game, I think this was scrapped prior in our Patreon episode. I actually think this was scrapped, and that it was sort of just, it's coming out as a result of some of the hype. I don't think it was just thrown away. I think they just stopped work on it, more or less. But I think, you know, as hype built up around this, it might have gone back into production, which has led us to where we are now.
We'll have to see
the hype level around this seems pretty big, so if that translates to sales, I wouldn't be surprised, because I personally think that the only reason this is actually coming about, if it does, is because of the very vocal interest in it.
Right Yeah, okay, well, I guess we're gonna have to see. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Chime in on our Discord, comment on the episode if you're able to do that, wherever you're listening or watching. But yeah, let us know your thoughts, because I think this is going to be a really interesting thing. We're just going to see how it plays out. But tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to thank our patrons. I don't think we have any more voicemails this week, but we'll remind you how to do that if you want to leave us a voicemail. And then we've got our random page, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we're back to thank our patrons. Patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast for ad-free episodes. Join us on our patron chats to get t-shirts and stickers, lots of cool stuff. Go check it out, patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. And welcome to our newest patrons. Man, you guys are the best. Every week we have people signing up, and this is really amazing. Julian, Irwin G, Bobby O, Robert, and Visvetech. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Thank you. So glad that you decided to join us. Thank you for your support. You keep us going, and we really do appreciate it. Also, have to shout out our Daedric Prince tier patrons, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kira C, and Peter R. Thank you for your continued support as well. And to all 135 of our paying patrons right now, thank you so much. And to all of our free patrons, you can go to patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast, sign up for free to make sure you're involved in doing things like the giveaway we just did. A lot of stuff will go still to our free patrons, even if you aren't getting ad-free episodes and stuff. And it's an easy way to just kind of stay plugged in if we're doing something cool. So thank you for all of that support. Also, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. You can on any podcatcher you're listening to us on. But if you leave a 5-star review, we'll read it out on a future episode. We don't have any this week, which means if you leave one this week, and in the US, those are the ones we can see now, then we'll read it out. And if you leave one internationally, thank you so much for doing that. We really do appreciate it. Also, if you want to leave a message, voiceline.app/Elder Scrolls is the place to do that. You can leave a voice message. We'll play it out, and Lotus and I will answer your question live during the live stream. But also, of course, it'll end up in the recordings here at the end of each episode. So please take a shot. If you've got thoughts about Oblivion Remake, you want to leave us a voicemail. And if you aren't sure, voiceline.app/Elder Scrolls, or just look in the description of the show. You'll find the links there. And Lotus, we still have to do the random UESP page.
My favorite.
This is the best part of this show. All right. So if you're not familiar, UESP is the best wiki online for Elder Scrolls stuff, friends of the show, all of that. And they've got a little section where you can hit a little random button, and we do it every week. And this week, we get an Elder Scrolls Online thing. Do you want to guess? You want to guess what kind of Elder Scrolls Online thing this is before I read it?
It's a housing item.
It's not a housing item, but it is. But it is something you get from the Crown Store and something that you can use on your face. It is
okay.
Subtle dark lashes. So it says here, when you want to emphasize your lovely eyes without going overboard on something like exotic or stage makeup, subtle dark lashes are just the right touch. It sounds like an advertisement.
Yeah, I was going to say, this, maybe it's dark lashes.
Yeah, maybe it's Maybelline. The subtle dark lashes were available in the Crown Store for 200 crowns from January 19th, 2017 to November 6th, 2017, usable by female characters of all races except for Khajiit and Argonians. Beast races.
A lot of stipulations on those subtle lashes there. I don't care for that.
Yeah, beast races don't get it. This doesn't work for them. And
I mean, manly Nord can't use it either? What a rip.
It's just for ladies. Females. But it also says here, Crown Store Showcase description. Get this. A little understatement can do wonders. But when you want to emphasize your lovely eyes without going overboard. Oh, wait, it's the same thing. It's the same exact text that's on the top.
Same text?
Why is it, why is it duplicated? Oh, beautiful. Man. I was like, it's going to tell me something else fun, but it doesn't.
It's not. It's going to tell you the same thing in case you didn't buy it the first time.
Ah, there we go. So, yeah. Well, there. I'm not going to edit that out.
You never really know what you can get with that random page.
Yeah, that's hilarious. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you for being here for the live streams. And Lotus, you have any last thoughts? Any last words?
No, I was going to say it's been a little bit since we've had an episode of Tales where we meant to do it last weekend, but unfortunately, scheduling has been a little tricky. However, we will be having, ideally this weekend, we will be talking about our thoughts for the new Elder Scrolls Online expansion. I can give you a little preview. I like it. There you go.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Check out Lotus's other show. Of course, you can check out my other shows, the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, which we brought up a lot of Lord of the Rings. If you've had a hard time reading the Silmarillion, I take you through all the details, make it super easy. Go check that out. Along with a bunch of other, we're going through The Hobbit right now. It's awesome. Also, follow Lorecast, doing some really cool stuff over there. And there are a bunch of other shows on the Robots Radio Network. And we've had a number of other shows. In fact, we've got, I'm onboarding right now another really cool, really popular podcast that totally makes sense on the network. And they reached out to me. I've been talking with them. I'll reveal more in future weeks, but very cool stuff. So lots of stuff over there, and robotsradio.net's the website. If you want to sign up, join the Rocket Club. I'll help you start your podcast, all of that kind of stuff. So that's what we do around here. Thanks for hanging out. Lotus, thanks for being here. Chat. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you as always.
Until next time, if you see a Daedric portal pop up in the middle of your neighborhood, you could just nope out. You could just like leave it there. It's totally fine.
Go in, take the sigil stone. You can never have enough sigil stones.
All right. We'll see you next time, everybody. See you later.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.